Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like ethics, history, the law, archaeology, geography, and the performing arts. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
And we're joined today by one of the pioneering writers in the field of interactive media and digital storytelling since the early 1990s, Carolyn Handler Miller. She's currently revising the fourth edition of her classic, Digital Storytelling, A Creator's Guide to Interactive Entertainment, from Focal Press. Her work as a digital storyteller includes entertainment, educational, informational, and training projects made for platforms such as CD-ROMs, kiosks, the web, smart toys, and integrated media projects. Her clients include major media companies, Fortune 500 corporations, and educational institutions. In addition, Carolyn is an international speaker and teacher on the subject of digital storytelling. It'd be nice to talk with you a bit about what could be called collaborative storytelling. In the digital age, we now have all of these collaborative media, social media, YouTube, we have open worlds, we have fan fiction. Could you maybe speak a little bit to that kind of storytelling and how that's different from storytelling that we've had in the past, or maybe ways that it's the same?
I came across an interesting project a few years ago. The idea was that this company would create a world, and something was happening, like a dysfunctioning dystopia world. It was in crisis. And you, as a viewer or a participant in this world, could create a character to insert into the world, and you'd videotape yourself in the form of a character and advance the story that way. And they would then post the character into this world, and you'd see your character playing a part in it. And I thought that was an amazing adventure. It was sort of like improv theater, and you didn't know where it would go. And they would provide anyone who wanted to do this with a Bible telling where the story had been so far, so you'd know how you could insert your character. Then you could just make up any character you wanted. And I thought this was brilliant. I thought what fun it would be.
There are also a lot more open worlds where participants can go and join this existing world on their own terms, and they can choose to observe the mores of the world or violate them depending on their inclination. Can we talk a little bit about how the stories unfold in some of these open worlds like Minecraft or The Sims or Fortnite, where there's some existing structure, but it's mostly the players who are bringing sort of active part of this story?
They're more, I'd say the players are discovering things. They might have encounters with other characters, and they're also trying to increase their status. I did some interviews a few years ago with people who worked in open world games. Open world is a really difficult thing to wrap your head around as a writer because they don't have a structure that we recognize. They don't advance in a linear way. I mean, they're the most non-linear types of stories that exist. Fortnite does have a basic framework, the Battle Royale. The idea comes from a feature film about a bunch of high schoolers, I think they were eighth graders, who are put on an island, and they have to kill each other until there's only one left. One man standing is the goal. And so you have to fight off everybody else. You are airlifted by a plane and dropped into this world where there are other characters. And your goal is to survive and to kill all the others that you can. And kids love it.
Happy, happy, happy.
Yeah. It's not my cup of tea, really. But I don't think there are as many things to find in that as there might be in other open world games like EverQuest. They're very interesting because there's a lot of comedy in them and goofiness. In games, you can create your own character most of the time, your avatar, who you control, and you insert into this world. And your avatar can do all kinds of things, discover things, interact with other characters. And I think it's interesting that Disney created an open world kind of game called Toontown. And it was a big hit and ran for about 10 years. And this was great because the concept was that these toons live in this bucolic world. Everything is green and sunny and happy. But then these evil characters move in who want to control all the land and build high rises and turn everything into corporate gray. And they're the guys who wear neckties and suits. And so what was fun was they constructed an entire world where there were shops and you had little jobs you could do. You could go to a shopkeeper and he'd say, bring me back a tulip. And you'd have to go find a tulip. And you'd get a little, some coins. And then you'd get, there might have been jelly beans in this game. You could buy weapons to fight the cogs, the bad guys. The fights were done comically.
Right.
So instead of shooting guns, you could hit them with, say, paper airplanes, or they'd throw their neckties at you, and you could squirt them with water bottles. But no one ever, it never got bloody. It was really fun. This was an inviting world that kids loved. And Disney, I guess, was in a hurry to develop some other projects, and after 10 years, they took it off. Ellen, did your kids play Toontown?
They never played Toontown. They certainly played some of the other stories that you talk about, like the Roger Rabbit and the Carmen Sandiego games.
Oh.
They both have engaged very deeply at different times with some of these more open worlds, certainly with The Sims and with Minecraft. I guess I've seen a lot more different kids playing Minecraft and bringing their own meaning to that environment. And I always joked because my son used to go into Minecraft and he'd just detonate enormous bombs or make chicken tornadoes or whatever kind of crazy thing. And his Minecraft worlds always looked like a post-apocalyptic wasteland. And I was looking at the Minecraft world of a female friend of his age, and she had villages and gardens. And so it was really striking to me how two different people could go into the same environment and create totally different stories with the elements that were there.
You were going to say something about Second Life.
Where, like Ellen was describing, where you could build your own world, your own place in Second Life, and your own clothes. You can sell merchandise there. A lot of universities actually held classes in Second Life.
And corporations would hold meetings.
Yes.
And all sorts of things. Yeah.
And there was a book reading, a sci-fi writer did a book reading. And
yeah. I had friends that did a lot of musical jams in Second Life because you could plug in MIDI instruments and then it didn't matter if your drummer was in Japan and your bass player was in Germany and you were in Austin, Texas. You could all meet in this virtual space. Whether it's the massive multiplayer games or these collaborative open world spaces, to me, a critical question, I mean, are these stories or are these ourselves telling stories?
I think they differ. Like Second Life doesn't really have a story. It's a place. And there doesn't seem to have any story elements that are not created by the participants. They create their own stories and their own characters. And there isn't an ongoing story there. But some of these games that are open worlds do have writers. They have a team of writers and producers who create the stories. They have different, like, islands where different things happen, and you can travel freely between them, and you meet different characters in these places, and you end up putting together your own story of what all this means. But there are story elements in the form of characters and what's happening. Like Saints Row is basically about a street gang that's taking over a city. And you play as one of the guys in the street gang. But how you go about taking over the city is up to you. And you can get very violent if you want, or you can use other techniques. And also on Vice City, the automobile game.
Grand Theft Auto.
Grand Theft Auto, yeah. Vice City is just one of them. There you can travel all over and meet wonderful characters and have encounters. And people play these games differently. They want different things out of them. Some just really like to explore, and that's what I enjoy most, really. But some like the competition. Some are very goal-oriented. But the people who create these worlds give options to the participants so they can go through the universe of this world any way they desire. And there are no correct paths, just as in Bandersnatch, there's no one path to one ending.
Because you actually do the work of structuring environments for optimal storytelling, do you see some examples of some of these collaborative or massively multiplayer environments that really encourage that collaborative meaning creation? I mean, you're saying in Grand Theft Auto or whatever, you don't get punished if you take an alternate path.
Right.
And I certainly know that's the case. I think in some games, you get a little bit punished if you're too antisocial. There is something built into the simulation structure.
You
to
also
keep
have
you from,
something called a griefer.
A griefer?
Yeah,
yes.
What's that?
A griefer is a player who, when a newbie comes into the game, tries to dispatch him or her as quickly as possible and eliminate them from the game. Not nice.
To what end?
So that they aren't having the fun of playing the game, just for some kind of ego gratification that they can do it.
But do you see some sort of basic structural elements that help support better storytelling or better collaboration for the participant?
I don't know about better, but when you were talking just a minute ago about some worlds that may be less violent and more pro-life, there were some wonderful worlds for kids where they were teaching some math skills. My memory for this particular world is not perfect. I think it's called Whyville.
Like why?
Why?
Why this? Why that?
Yes, right. Exactly. And they did a funny thing on Whyville. You had all your avatars in this place and doing whatever they were doing. And all of a sudden, one of them broke out in a rash. And then the other avatars broke out in a rash, too. And it was a lesson in how epidemics spread. You can do so many different things with these worlds. And I don't think we've begun to understand what all the possibilities are.
Do you think there's a crucial difference between entertainment and storytelling in these cases?
No. I mean, I've worked on a lot of educational products that are very entertaining and use a lot of storytelling. There's no restriction when you're doing them that you can't do something educational
and entertaining. What I meant was, is there a difference between entertainment and storytelling? I know that both can be useful, whether it's education or getting a message out or just inducing, say, an emotional reaction in the participant. But sometimes when you were talking about some of these worlds, especially the open worlds, I wonder sometimes about the ones that are a little more restrictive and how those maybe are more what I think of as storytelling, where there is some kind of emotional response that the creator wants to induce in the participant versus what I think, what at least in my late terms, think of as entertainment. Well, this is just fun because it's fun.
Okay.
You see what I'm driving at?
Yes, I do. And I think that's a good point. There are times when it's just for fun and they construct something that would be fun, like a battle in Toontown using, say, cream puffs instead of guns. I'm just picking that out of the air. But, you know, I think what you're getting at is really interesting as a writer of these kinds of worlds. It's a very different experience to write for interactive media than it is for writing for TV, which I did for years.
Oh, really? What TV? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, I did. I started out in kids programming.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like Captain Kangaroo, if you remember him.
Of course.
And then I did after school specials. And then I got to do some primetime TV series stuff.
So that was straight narrative
storytelling. Right. And when you come into this area of digital media, everything is kind of upside down, or the rules that you're used to are gone. You're used to having total control of the story. When you're saying, say you're doing a TV show, you are in charge, you're God of the story. But when you're doing interactive media, you have to let other people in. If you don't let them in, you're not doing your job right. So it's a different way of thinking of story. You have to construct a world that is satisfying for the viewer, but may not be the kind of story you're used to telling. You cannot just predict that there'll be one particular path through the story and one particular ending. And when you're writing in digital media, you really don't know what the participants are going to do. You're often surprised and sometimes shocked. And I have some examples in the book of some projects that went the wrong way for the producers.
Well, I guess sometimes it's all about letting go of the process. That's just fascinating. Thank you so much. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, string bassist and loopmeister extraordinaire.